Okay, we're back, and looking at some of the plates again in the book, and there's a marvelous drawing of a classic Roman fort, which I guess Fort Antonia would have looked like very much. Extraordinarily detailed. Where did this diagram come from?
It comes from a book that's written about the Roman Imperial Army. It's just come out recently.
And it's
quite a number of pictures of ancient Roman forts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This is the one that's in Jerusalem, which is, I'm saying, the Haram Sharif. It's very close to the one in Rome itself in dimensions. In fact, it's slightly larger.
Huh. The detail work in this fort is extraordinary.
Yes, indeed.
Each
Roman fort was a city in itself. It was something similar to our own armed forces in Europe. When we go to a base in Europe, we see little America there with everything from McDonald's, et cetera. And the Romans did virtually the same thing wherever they went, and particularly in Jerusalem. Now, that fort was built by King Herod, but in 6 A.D., just while Christ was an infant, it was taken over by the Romans, and the Romans continued it until the destruction of Jerusalem. And in fact, after the destruction was over, that is the place that Titus, who was the Roman general, selected for the 10th Legion to remain in the area to supervise the region. And what better place than the former Roman fort?
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, Jeff, I think it'd be good for your listeners to know that Josephus, he records about what happened just after the war. 3 years later, down at Masada, is where the 960 Jewish remnants of the war, they killed themselves before surrendering to General Silva of the Roman army.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the story of Masada is quite a beautiful and interesting story. But that happened 3 years after the war was over, and Eliezer, who was in charge of the Jewish people there at that time, said that the only thing left in Jerusalem, he said the temple was in ruins, the city was nothing, the only thing left was the Roman encampment, which had been there before. And of course, the only thing that has come down to us today from the Herodian period, with rocks or stones still in place, is the Haram Sharif, and that's what he was talking about.
And how much of it is left? Just the one wall?
No, there are four walls.
But
the northern wall is practically gone, but
eastern
wall is practically intact, the southern and also the western. There's one stone in the western wall that you can get down to. You have to climb down to it. That weighs 400 tons.
Well, that's
stone.
That's of Egyptian proportions.
Exactly. And some of the stones around the southwest corner are 60 feet long and about 4 to 5 feet high, and they are in the neighborhood of 70 tons.
Wow.
Each stone.
Right.
And there are over 10,000 of them.
Yeah, I still want to know how they took that temple apart.
Well, they...
I guess they go down quicker than they go up. That's all.
The temple was not only a fortress. It was, like Fort Knox, it was the treasury of the Jewish nation. Josephus, remarkably, we were talking about human nature and civilization. They actually had what we call safety deposit boxes in the temple that people from all over the Roman and the Parthian worlds, they would actually... leave in care of the priests there. So in some cases it was the treasury of the nation.
Tell me a little bit more about the war with the Jews. That occurred over how many years ago?
It took place from 66 A.D., from the autumn time, just before the Sukkot, as it's called, or the Feast of Tabernacles, in the autumm of 66 to 70 A.D., It was destroyed. The temple went up in flames on the 10th day of the night of the 5th month, the month of Ab.
Mm-hmm.
And remarkably, now that's in our August, about in our August time. And remarkably, Jeff, that temple went up in flames by accident, as a matter of fact. And Titus, the Roman general, we're told, tried to put out the flames. I mean, to have his troops to do it, but it was impossible to do. But it was completely destroyed and burnt down Not that the stones were, but I mean, they fell down and all the support system was destroyed on that 9th and 10th of Ab, on the exact anniversary that the temple was destroyed in the time of Nebuchadnezzar some 600 years before.
Oh, wow.
Exactly must have been, on the same day.
It's extraordinary. Well, they say there are no accidents. Who knows?
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. That must have been one heck of a conflagration.
It was. There are some beautiful paintings of it that the artists have rendered, and honestly, it would have been a conflagration that could have been seen from the moon easily.
it sounds like it. The wars themselves were fought in and around Jerusalem. Over what period of countryside was this conflict carried out? How wide-ranging were these battles?
Well, they were mostly confined, the one that destroyed Jerusalem and the temple was confined to the city itself at that time. Later on, in the second century, in 132 to 135, in the time of Hadrian, mm-hmm. there were wars all over the area. That was the final Jewish war mm-hmm. With the Romans. But the one that we are talking about here occupied the space of Jerusalem itself. There were five legions there, four in actual fact, with auxiliaries. And each of them had about 5,000 men.
5,000, yeah. It's amazing that people are still dying today. It's almost a killing ground if you look at it over the millennia.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, I have written about some prophecies in the book of Zechariah that actually speak a time of reconciliation coming, and it appears to be before what we Christians would call the second advent of Christ. A spirit of grace and supplication, Zechariah says, is going to come to that area. Mm. But from any perspective that we could look at today, that description there seems so remote that it would be impossible of happening. That's but on the other hand, it is in the prophecies that a reconciliation among the peoples there is to transpire. And, of course, I would wish that would happen soon.
I completely agree. This book is, again, just published. It is The Temples of Jerusalem Forgot. I would urge you to get a copy of it. Pass it on to anyone else who's interested as well. All you can do is start, I guess, at the bottom, Dr. Martin, and spread the word. You're going to take it to the conference, and you say 6,000 or 8,000 people are going to attend?
About 8,000 of us will attend there from the various universities around the world. And these are the top scholars, and I will be displaying it at that time. And Professor James Tabor, from the University of North Carolina, will be discussing this whole issue, and he is very much in favor of everyone looking at it thoroughly, because it is a subject that needs to serious investigation. He has given me one of the finest quotes that I can get on the reliability of at least my material. And of its urgency. And I do believe that soon that people throughout the world will begin to understand this matter much more than they do right now. And when we do find out that people are fighting over the wrong places, again, I say, Jeff, I hope that it will cause us to look in other directions before we start fighting again.
Oh, I completely agree. You have written other books, a number of other books, and as we approach the holiday season, the book, The Star That Astonished the World, The Star of Bethlehem, the real story of Jesus, I think it's something we might want to spend a little time on during the next hour.
Well, I would love to talk about that. As a matter of fact, that book, I wrote that back in 1980, and the newest revision is 1994. And Griffith Observatory, on their webpage, they give quite a good splash on it, even to this very day. And they've been showing it since 1980, and over 600 planetariums around the world are showing my new discoveries on what was happening at the time of the Nativity.
That's amazing. They all base their shows on your research.
Well, on this book, The Star That Astonished the World, yes. And it's quite an interesting historical and astronomical story. And Matthew, when he talked about the star that was associated with the Magi, he was only giving the tip of the iceberg of what was happening in the Celestials at that time. It was quite a pageant going on that really inspired the Magi to come to Jerusalem and to Herod to give their gifts to the Christ child.
Extraordinary.
It's remarkable. If you see a planetarium show on it, the oohs and the ahs are all over the place.
And it must make you proud to know your work is reaching so many people.
Well, it's getting to, and the main thing about it is it shows, in my view, and I just mentioned to your audience from where I'm coming, I want people to get their themselves back into the original documents of the Old Testament and the New Testament and historical records, and let's see what they say. I'm not someone trying to give my interpretation. I mean, every one of us should be a man and woman enough to do what we want to there. But if we can just re-examine what the original documents say, we may be in for some surprises.
I think you've proven that with your book, The Temples of Jerusalem Forgotten, no doubt. Okay, we're going to pause and come back and spend some more time with Dr. Martin next hour talking about the star that astonished the world as we approach yet another holiday season, a holiday season of strife, but maybe things, as Dr. Martin suggested, are headed towards some kind of a reconciliation, let's hope so. All right, we'll be back after the top of the hour news break. Don't forget to visit my website at rents.com. It's R-E-N-S-E. New stories of an important nature going up around the clock for you from all around the world, and I hope you'll stop in and take a look. Almost 12,000 stories now housed in the archives right there for you. And our program's archived all the way back to 1997. You can hear any show you like going back to 1997. Anytime, anywhere in the world, just get online and enjoy. All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes.